flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Got any ideas that will work to help your favorite teams? Let them know about it by calling 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream every NFL on CBS playoff game. Live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 305, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Marco was just telling me that Bill Burr thing, he went back and watched a lot of it, and he's concerned that it's all staged. That the story might be true, but this interaction between the two might, you know, Bill Burr might not actually be as mad as he seems, or it might not have been a surprise. That would be disappointing. But if the story's true, I still stand by my, wow, that's amazing. What are the odds two people like that have two separate, their father has two separate families and the kids grow to both be like successful, not only just famous people, but successful artists, talented people. If you were just, wherever you were dropping your seed, famous people were popping out. Like, that's crazy. You like that one. Okay. That is pretty funny. And it's true. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, what's going on, John? How you doing this morning?
Good, brother. How are you?
I'm all right. I got some Giants I want to talk with you, but you mentioned something about Woody Harrelson.
Yes.
That dude, I swear to goodness, man, I've heard his name come up in conspiracy theories from anything across the fact that his father was in the CIA to, like, Pentagon defense, and now I'm hearing this other stuff about his father being, like, the you know, just going around dropping his seed places and giving people the future.
But, well, apparently him and Matthew McConaughey could be brothers.
That would be an odd pairing.
Yes.
That definitely would be.
But I haven't heard any of the other conspiracy theories about his father being involved in the government or anything.
There's all kinds of stuff. Like, if you go into that, bro, there's even, like, if you follow stuff with the Kennedy assassination, there's this famous picture that they have of some guys that they had arrested in, I think it was in New Orleans or might even have been in Dallas, I'm sorry, the day that it happened. And there's all kinds of rumors that his pops was one of the guys that was in this picture. I think it's like a silhouette kind of. Anyway, I don't even want to get into this.
Okay. It's
a rabbit hole. But the Giants stuff I called to talk to you about, you know, I'm a Jets fan. But I'm going to tell you this, man. I think, like, I've been hearing all the talk of late, and I feel like the Giants are actually in a better situation than a lot of people are giving them credit for.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at the two scenarios, on the one hand, either some of the speculation and the confusion that's going on with 1 and 2 means that you either get Shador or you get your chance to get at Cam Ward, who's the other guy that everybody's talking about. Or on the other side, the flip side, both of those guys are gone, and at 3, you still get a chance at Hunter.
Yeah.
And with the money that the Giants have free agency-wise and the unique situation that this offseason is going to be with guys like, you know, Sam Darnold, even the lower end of that scale, like the Jameis Winstons, the Justin Fields, even with the guys that they're talking about with trade, and the fact that that third pick is carrying you through, like, I believe you have all of yours, right? There are no picks that you've lost out on.
But I don't think so. No, I think they have all their picks here.
So it's coming third in every other round that follows after that. That's a decent position to be in, because like I said, either you get to form the Trinity with Dable, Shane, and the young QB to move forward, and you've got money to kind of like bolster positions around him, or you've got somebody like a Travis Hunter with neighbors on the other side, a bunch of other young talent that he drafted last year with a bunch of picks that you could get in, like I said, you're picking high in every other round later on to add to the team, and you got money that you could go out and spend on somebody like one of these free agents that's out there, like I said. If Dable is who he is, if you give him somebody like a kid like Darnold at 26, if you watch the whole, like, everybody's focused on what happened towards the end, but if you look at the whole season and you tell Dable, just like he had with Allen, that this is a guy who, as good as he is, there's a couple of things that you need to fix. Maybe there's a chance that he finds that too. And he's got all that young talent that just came out of this current draft that's coming up now, in addition to what you guys just got. So I think it's a better situation than people are actually giving credit for. You know what I'm saying? Either way that it goes.
Yeah, I don't disagree on some level. I don't think they're as, you know, listen, the NFL is based on not being that far off, but you'd have to see it before you could believe it. And with a young quarterback and the schedule they're playing against this next year seems like a very difficult task. But I agree with you. But I heard a couple of things. One, you know, Sam Darnold making somewhere between $20 and $30 million. I think that's a better option than Derek Carr, as there's been some reports that the Giants, I think Jordan Renan just tweeted out that the trade market, the trade option could be open to him, and Derek Carr, you know, could be out of favor in New Orleans and could be an option. This is why I want to draft a quarterback. These are the options we're talking about, right? We're talking about Sam Darnold, who you have to pay $30 million, and he's proven to be an absolute bust and see ghost in the big game, or trade for Derek Carr, who stinks. Let's trade for Derek Carr. Are we serious? Are we serious? Why? Because Derek Carr with this team might be able to win 5 or 6 games? Maybe? I mean, if Brian Daboll turns Derek Carr into a real winner, you know what? Thank God we held on to him. You want to trade for Derek Carr? Is that what you guys want to, is that what we want to do instead of drafting a young quarterback? Trade for Derek Carr? Look, he's got some tools. He's had some years. The guy is, he scares the hell out of me. He gets into the red zone. And not that that's been a successful place for the Giants over the last handful of years, but I mean, he is an awful red zone quarterback. He scares the hell out of me. I want no part of Derek Carr. No part. Remember when the Jets were going to get Derek Carr instead of Aaron Rodgers? As bad as it's been, they're better off with Aaron Rodgers than they are with Derek Carr in that contract. No, thank you. Draft the quarterback. And I'm praying. Look, that's the hope. If, you know, it's a very, the thing with the Giants, I was going to get into it, might as well get into it here. Here's the thing with the Giants, right? Right now, there is reason to believe, based on a statement made, we don't know, it's very early on, but a statement made by the president of football operations of the Tennessee Titans that they will not pass on a generational talent with the first overall pick. And we all know that means Hunter. He's the only generational talent on the board. It's certainly not one of the two quarterbacks. You know, maybe after watching film and talking to and seeing what he does at the combine, could you say that Abdul Carter is a generational talent? I doubt it, but maybe. But it's certainly not one of the two quarterbacks. So if Tennessee is not going to draft a quarterback, and they won't pass, like, if you're going to go, here's, because people now say, oh, it's up for grabs, go trade for the pick. And I get that. I do. And if I thought I needed to, I guess I could be convinced. But, I mean, and it depends on how I feel. Do you want to dare? Do you want to dare the Titans to pass up on generational talent? Because the leverage with the Giants is they're the only place, right, that guarantees it on some level. They're the only place that guarantees it. If you want to get Abdul Carter, because if you trade behind Cleveland, you know the Giants are going to get a quarterback. Cleveland could take Hunter, and then you're guaranteed, you know. I would think Cleveland would probably trade the pick, either get a quarterback or trade the pick, but like, they're not moving anywhere else and getting them. The Giants could take him, even if like they could threaten to take him. So it's like, do you wait and see what Tennessee does? Or do you try to move up to number 1 if they're willing to move back to 3? I guess I would if I wanted, if I felt strongly enough that one of the quarterbacks is better than the other, then I would. I have no problem. I've been saying, and I don't know what kind of draft capital you'd have to give up 1-3 or 3-1. I don't know. I got to look at that. I don't know if do they still go by the draft chart and point system? I think they still do. I don't know. I remember, you know, Mike was big on this.
I think some teams still use it. Some teams have used like a modified one now.
All right, so if you go by, I just draft NFL Trade Value Chart 2025 version, whatever that's worth on drafttech.com. They have, because they have each pick is worth a value point system. They did this years ago. I remember doing this a lot with Mike around the draft time. So not that he's the only one who did it, but I'm just saying that's how long it goes back because I haven't been with Mike in a long time. But this draft thing has been around. So the Giants, if you look at this, the third pick is worth 2,200 points. The first pick is worth 3,000. So they have to make up 800 points. The Giants' second round pick is only worth 560. So it would have to be a second round plus. Second round and a fourth. Somewhere around second, even the second and a third. Jeez. That's more than I thought to move up two spots.
What did the Bears give up when they traded up the one spot for Trubisky? It was a second and a third, right?
Was that what it was?
Oh, no, okay. It was a third and fourth that year and their third round the following year.
A third and fourth and a third that year. And what?
But here's the thing. It matters whether or not you get it right.
Yeah.
If they drafted Mahomes, 100%. Nobody would care.
Oh, 100%.
The Chiefs traded up for Mahomes. Look where they are now. The Bills traded up for Josh Allen. Look where they are. Yep. Nobody cares what they gave up.
100%. If they get the quarterback right, it doesn't matter. They give up the rest of the draft for all I care. I am Mr. Quarterback. I believe in it. I am full tilt on Giants need a quarterback, and everything else can take a backseat for all I'm concerned.
And you know, it's funny. We always give credit to the Bills for trading up and getting Josh Allen.
Yeah.
You know who traded Kansas City the pick that they used on Mahomes?
I feel like I should know this.
The Bills.
Was it the Bills?
Same GM, same head coach.
Yeah. Was it the Bills? Yeah, that's bad. But, I mean, listen, Allen's like kind of right there. He's just not the proven winner yet. And also, I mean, he's not with Andy Reid.
Listen, you would take him over pretty everybody not named Mahomes or maybe Burrow. But they are one of the teams that they could have had the other guy that always beats him.
Yep.
Until maybe Sunday.
And, and the famous story that Ben McAdoo was pounding the table in the Giants office to trade up for Patrick Mahomes. But so you'd have to make up 800 points. So you would be looking at something like a second and a third rounder. That's a lot to move up two spots. But if you get the quarterback, no one cares. Let's go to Dom in Dover Plains. What's up, Dom?
Hey, C Mac, how you doing, man?
Good. How are you, brother?
All right. Hey, C Mac, I hope you can let me get my point across with Mets and the Knicks.
Sure.
So with the Mets, so their plan now is to have Brett Beatty at third. So you're going to move Vientos, which he has been working hard at third base, and I think he improved last year playing third. Now you're going to move him to first and put Beatty, that's not a proven good defensive player, at third base. Now you got to have two weakness in the infield. So we got Juan Soto for what? To do what? To waste all these years with these two guys in the corners?
I don't know.
It makes no sense.
Well, I don't know about all these years, but if Beatty hits, then you've improved third base defensively, and you would hope that Vientos could figure out a way to become a serviceable first baseman or a DH, and they get Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to play first base, or they get someone else to play first base. It's not a one-year thing with Juan Soto. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's here for 15 years. So while I agree, I don't love that plan. I'd rather just sign Pete. If Beatty or Mauricio become an option or answer that question in the affirmative at third base, that helps you.
I'd rather Acuña at third base than Beatty. I'd rather him.
We'll see.
When it comes to
it's a short term thing where Acuña was better in the short term. Beatty had Beatty had a short term run. For a little bit, I guess, but he can hit in AAA. I wouldn't totally be against giving him another shot, but Acuña was a short-term thing, but he showed promise, no doubt.
All right, well, let's see what happens. And when it comes to the Knicks, they're a good team, but they're not a great team. This reminds me of the Patrick Ewing era. that they were good, but they couldn't compete in the playoffs when it came to these other great teams. I think they one piece away from being that great team. Who do you think the trade deadline?
I don't know. I know that if they're going to get anyone of significance, it's probably going to take moving. And thank you for the call. It's probably going to take moving Mitchell Robinson to get anybody of significance with any kind of money. I saw JJ on SMY talking about Smart. That could be a very interesting move. I don't know. I don't know if there's... I mean, do you move... Do you go all in on the offense and say, forget Mitchell Robinson and helping me defend and help me defend the rim and give me another big man? Forget that. I'm not going to try and improve my weakened defense. I'm going to go all in and try and strengthen a strength and get as good offensively as I can and get more bench and more rotation pieces. Offensively, you can still score, and I'll live with lesser defense. I mean, I guess that makes sense to me because I don't know how much Mitchell Robinson helps helps that much. I don't know. And especially, you just can't count on him to stay healthy. But I don't know what you're going to get for him, too, because, how long is he going to be here before the trade deadline? How many games is he going to have under him before you can move him? Or before you have to move him, rather. So, I do think it makes sense to just say, screw it, I'm an offensive team. Let's get as many bench players and rotation pieces as I can to make sure I'm scoring, making sure I'm not killing these guys with minutes, making sure I can figure this thing out and stay this off and have a good second unit, have someone who can run the point off the unit. In the second unit, that makes sense to me as opposed to saying, hey, Mitchell Robinson should help our defense. Yeah, but how much?
Your official station to talk Giants. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 328. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We opened the show with Pete Alonso and the Mets, and I'm getting accused by a couple people on Twitter for being a Met troll, which I don't think I am. I think I'm being very fair. But since I'm being accused of it, I suppose we can try and lean into it a little bit. And I'm not sure if this is going to troll any Met fan or not. But it is an interesting question, I suppose, because Kyle Tucker will be a free agent at the end of the year. Kyle Tucker, formerly of the Houston Astros, he is now a Chicago Cub. And he will be a free agent, barring signing a contract extension, which I doubt he would, this close to free agency again. I don't think guys will ever do that again. I don't know if you'll ever see guys forego free agency when they're a year away. I don't think it. Not guys like Kyle Tucker, and not guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and not guys like Aaron Judge or Juan Soto or those type of players. But I do find it interesting that the Yankees, if they sign Kyle Tucker next year, might end up with the better player after all. Because if you look at MLB and their famous shredder, where they go through and use all the analysis to pick the best at every position, the best right fielder in baseball is none other than Aaron Judge. Obviously, far better than everybody else. Aaron Judge is the best right fielder in baseball. It is not close. He is the two-time MVP, reigning MVP, and the best probably overall player in all of baseball this side of Shohei Ohtani when he pitches. Number two is quite interesting, though, because number two is not Juan Soto. Not Juan Soto is not, according to MLB Network, Juan Soto is not the second best right fielder in the game. The second best right fielder in the game is Kyle Tucker. And so I'm just thinking, as a Yankee fan, I might be able to get the better player in a year for a pittance, because I don't think he's getting anywhere near Juan Soto's money. Now, they almost traded for him this year, and imagine that coup. You want to talk about plan B sucks? I would have had to change my tune if they would have been able to trade for Kyle Tucker. Ultimately, they were not doing it, but and did not do it. But this is going to be his 28th season coming up. So he's going to hit free agency before 30, but 3 years later than Juan Soto. His birthday is, he literally turned 28 7 days ago. So this is going to be a full, this whole year will be legitimately 28. Next year is 29. So you're going to sign Kyle Tucker going into his 29th season. And if you look at the numbers, and considering he's the far, far superior outfielder. In fact, he's won a gold glove back in 2022. Last year was an injury-plagued season for him. He broke a bone in his leg. But the numbers he was projected to put up last year, in 78 games, which is less than half a season, or let's just call it half a season, he hit 23 home runs, drove in 50, hit .289, and had an OPS of .993. That is a better OPS than Juan Soto had this year. And if you look at the numbers overall, if you go to like the 162, it's like 32 home runs to Juan Soto's 35, 102 RBIs even for both of them, 285 Juan Soto, 275 Kyle Tucker. On base percentage is the big major difference, and OPS is 870 for Tucker and 953 for Juan Soto. So clearly the better on-base percentage guy. But after that, home runs are very similar. RBIs are similar. Batting average is similar. And defense is far better. Base stealing and athleticism and base running, far better. He's going to be an outfielder for the next however many years before Juan Soto's ever considered having to go to be the DH. I think you could make the argument. You could make the argument considering how much money Juan Soto costs. If the Yankees can trade at the deadline or the Yankees can sign Kyle Tucker, that you are at least in the discussion of being, considering all the other moves they made. Now, that's where the difference is. Just Juan Soto for $765 or Kyle Tucker for $400 and everything else they did. Because I don't think Kyle Tucker is going to get anywhere near that. Maybe he'll get somewhere near the $50 million a year, Soto gets, but I don't think he's going to get that either. I think Juan Soto was a unique situation, Yankees versus Mets, all-time great, World Series champion, although so is Kyle Tucker. I mean, with Fried, with possibly another year of Bellinger, with if they sign Williams to a deal, I mean, you're talking about now starting to look like a possibly better team than they were with Juan Soto, because they're not there yet. They're not anywhere there, near there yet. And that's why I said Kyle Tucker, but they would need Kyle Tucker. That was the only thing that made Plan B acceptable. But we'll see. He's only a couple years older, and the numbers really, other than on-base percentage, the numbers aren't that much different. On-base percentage is far better, and that is one of the most important stats. I'm not diminishing that. It's a huge, huge statistic. But when you take into account how far better he is in out in the field, in right field, how far better he is on the base path. And other than last year, he's been pretty healthy. 2019, he played 150 games. 2020, he played 47 of the 60. 21, 151. 22, 153. I'm an idiot. Looking at Juan Soto. That's Juan Soto. He plays a hell of a lot of games. Kyle Tucker, over the last handful of years, when he started playing every day, 121. In 21, he had 140, 150, 157, and then last year he got hurt. So, for the most part, he's been healthy. He plays a far better outfield. He's won a gold glove. He's finished top five in the MVP. He's a three-time All-Star. He had a 993 OPS last year, and he'll be hitting free agency at 29. I am fascinated, in all seriousness. Forget the Yankee Juan Soto Met connection that I'm trying to have some fun with at 3:35 in the morning in all seriousness, I am curious what contracts for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and what contracts for Kyle Tucker are going to look like. Because the Juan Soto contract, I think, got really out of whack for a couple of different reasons. One, the idea that Ohtani was the year before and that number of 700 suddenly didn't seem crazy. And two, the Yankees and the Mets were kind of in a we won't be denied mode until finally the Mets won that. But the Mets were the reason it got, the Yankees were the reason it got pushed up to 765. I don't know. And the Mets are trying to do something very specific with signing Juan Soto away from the Yankees. It was the player plus that, plus changing the dynamic, plus giving their fan base that win. So like the idea that, like, what's Kyle Tucker going to get at 29 years old? Now, again, he's on the better side of 30, and his numbers aren't that far off. And he just got voted by Major League Baseball, or at least MLB Network, a better player than Juan Soto. A better right fielder. And that's not just defensive. A better overall. Who would you rather have on your team right now in right field? And MLB Network is telling you they'd rather have Kyle Tucker. He's going to be 29. I wonder what that free agency looks like, because I don't think it's going to be anywhere near Juan Soto. And yet you're going to get a player that's very comparable, who's going to be able to play right field at a much better clip for much longer. And, you know, steal you some bases. He had 30 steals last year. 30 in 2023. This most recent year he got hurt, only played half a season, 11. He steals bases. He's athletic. He strikes out less than 100. He's never struck out 100 times in a season. So he doesn't strike out. He's a 275 hitter. He's an 870 OPS player. He's a Gold Glove winning outfielder. He hits 35 home runs and drives in 100. And he's viewed as the better player than Juan Soto, but his contract won't come anywhere near it. And how about that for a Yankee Cashman Hal bargain? All right, we couldn't get Juan Soto. He's 2 years older, and we got him for more than and less than half the price. Because they have a bunch of one-year contracts. That's what you're looking at the Yankees. They better have a big free agency next year, because you look at all these different one-year free agents. They have Bellinger, who could possibly be a one-year at most two, right? Even Stanton, guys who are going to be here. Stanton's money goes from $32 million to $19 next year. Stanton's money, although you could argue 19 for how much he provides you other than in the postseason, but 19 isn't, it's not 32, it's not unreasonable. You got one more year after this of the DJ LeMahieu money. You've got your first baseman Goldschmidt on a one-year deal. Jazz Chisholm becomes a free agent after this year. The closer becomes a free agent after this year. Like, there's a lot of money coming off the books next year. And Kyle Tucker, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and Murakami, the first base superstar from Japan. Those three players are going to be available in free agency. They almost traded. They tried to trade for Tucker in the offseason, and there are reports on how much they love and are tying their entire offseason next year to the first baseman out of Japan. The Yankees better go spend money. And I got to tell you, as much as I love Juan Soto, and I do, I wanted Juan Soto, Plan B sucks, I'm furious he didn't want to stay with the Yankees, I'm furious they couldn't come to a deal, I would never tell you they're better without him. I got to be honest, though. If they can sign Kyle Tucker next year to a 7, 8, 9 year deal worth $450 million, it's not the craziest thing compared to 765 and free suites and everything else for Juan Soto, who's only going to be, you're going to get him for one extra year, in this time period. But when they sign him, he's 2 years older than Juan Soto right now. He's 2 years older. He's hitting free agency 1 year later. So it's an extra 3 years of the prime. I get it. But half the contract? close to half the contract? For a guy still under 30 who's going to be able to run, who's going to be able to steal, who's going to be able to play defense, and who puts up relatively comparable numbers. And MLB Network is telling you is better than. That's, you want to pivot from Juan Soto a year late? That's the move. That's why I wanted to trade for him in the offseason. I don't know why they didn't do it. Dan in Forest Hills. What's up, Dan?
Hi. Regarding the Tucker thing, yes. Who says he's not going to get at least $550 million for 11 years? If he's better than Soto,
I don't think comparable or better. I that's what I'm saying. I don't think he will. You might be right. He might. I don't think he will. I think Juan Soto was a unique situation. One, he's again, 3 years older, so he's not, even if you just go on the years, he's going to get 12 at the max or 11 at the max.
That's right. Yeah. 11 for 550. Yeah, and Steve Cohen may want to outbid Steinbrenner, so might the Dodgers.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a foregone? I'm saying that would be an option for the Yankees to pivot off Juan Soto a year later.
And as far as Guerrero is concerned, from what I hear and understand, he doesn't want to play for the Yankees. He doesn't like the Yankees.
Yeah, so. I mean, he's definitely said that. And then at the trade deadline last year, he said he would be a professional and go wherever he would ask at the trade deadline. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. And when someone throws $450, $500 million in your face, you'll go play wherever. So
to say Steve Cohen next year won't throw $700 million at him, $600.
I absolutely think he will. I think he's going to be a Met next year.
Most likely is.
I think he's going to be a Met next year. I never said Vladimir Guerrero to the to the Yankees. You may have brought that up. I just think it's preposterous that he won't go play for them. If Steve Cohen decides he doesn't want him and wants Kyle Tucker instead and buys him, and the Yankees and the Dodgers already have a first baseman, and the Yankees are sitting there at the only girl ball at the dance,
yeah,
he's going to say, "I'm sorry, I don't want to play for you." Okay. Sure.
Well, it's possible. Steve Cohen goes after Tucker and Guerrero.
Hey, possibly buys the whole damn league. It's possibly
well, the Dodgers
just,
do.
It's possibly just buys the Dodgers. No, I understand.
Well, you know what? Dodgers have got more money than Steve Cohen. The Guggenheim Group is, you know, they can buy Steve Cohen, as it turns out. So.
Well, I mean, I don't know if that's true. I've always been told, and no one's corrected me, that Steve Cohen's the richest owner in baseball. But they certainly have a lot of money. As a group, they have more. Okay. Steve Cohen individually has more, as the Guggenheim Group has more money. Whatever it is. Even if they all had the same money as Steve Cohen, that's enough money to do whatever you want to do and treat this thing like a toy or whatever else. But, listen, of course, who's to say the Mets won't buy everybody or the Dodgers won't buy? Yeah, okay. I'm just telling you, the Yankees have a lot of money coming off the books. The Mets didn't buy Aaron Judge. The Dodgers didn't buy Aaron Judge. Somehow, some free agents snuck through the cracks. I still think the Yankees will go out there and be able to sign the occasional big-time free agent. And I think Kyle Tucker and the first baseman star from Japan is probably their two most likely, one of those two. I doubt both, maybe both, probably not both. But one of those two. And I've said, I firmly believe this. If Pete Alonso is not a Met, and now I firmly believe he won't be. If Pete Alonso is not a Met, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will be next year. I don't think there's any doubt. I feel pretty strongly about that. Unless they move Vientos to first, he hits 50 home runs and looks great at first base, and they feel they could do better in another place and go get Kyle Tucker instead, I suppose. But I would think Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a very good chance to be a Met next year. And I totally agree. Totally agree. Same thing, same premise, most likely. You never know how Steve Cohen will treat it. Certainly treated Juan Soto that way. But as a Yankee fan, I am well aware if Steve Cohen decides, hey, I didn't sign Pete. Hey, we're not buying starting pitching. We're figuring that out on the cheap because that's how my GM likes to do it. Hey, you know, we've got money to spend. I'm still under the luxury tax of the latest threshold, or I don't care. I'm going to get Kyle Tucker. I'm going to get him. Then he will. And the Yankees won't be able to outbid him. I'm totally on board with that. I think this particular free agent, Juan Soto, was the guy. And I don't know if he'll treat every other free agent or any other free agent the same way. But if he does, if he chooses to, yeah. Yankees will probably lose out.
Your official station to talk New York Rangers. Yeah! The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Football Sunday. So good to me.
That's right, so good to me. Although it was so-so last week, all three of us went 2-2. You guys had all four of the exact same picks, and we differed on Kansas City and Philadelphia. So you guys nailed the Rams, although you got lucky with a missed extra point. I got Kansas City. So that's where we were. We were both right on the... we were both wrong on the Lions.
And we were wrong on the Texans. You had the Chiefs.
I had the Chiefs.
And we were all right on the Bills.
And we were all right on the Bills. That's
so Marco
how
and I had a nice Sunday after starting off 0-2.
Yes.
Correct.
And I went 1-1 each day. Okay, that makes sense. All right, but we get the championship weekend now. We got the Commanders at Philadelphia. Philadelphia, a 6.5-point favorite. Fliegelman, what you got?
So... there's this trend going around. Everybody says it. You know, you talked earlier in the week. Well, yeah. Jaden Daniels is going to be now the fifth rookie quarterback to play in the conference championship. None of them have gotten to the Super Bowl, blah, blah, blah. We all know that. The problem I have sometimes with trends is that people are just like, oh, okay, this hasn't happened before. And they don't ever look at the context.
Yeah.
Like one guy that's in there, Sean King, he's considered a rookie. It wasn't even his first season playing.
Yeah.
Guy was along for the ride.
Yeah, yeah.
Mark Sanchez, I love Mark. I'm a Jets fan. He was not the driving force behind that 2009 Jets team.
Correct.
Joe Flacco the year before, good, but again, not the guy for the Baltimore Ravens. He was when they won the Super Bowl years later, but that year, it wasn't really his team. That was a defense, running game. Like, that was the Ravens.
Right.
And then even Brock Purdy, one, he got hurt in the game a couple years ago, so who knows if they would have been more competitive or won it.
Yeah.
And even then, he had only started, I think, 5 games at the end of the regular season, won them all. But he was not the guy for the entire season, and he wasn't the main factor on that team. Jaden Daniels is the Commanders. I'm on the same page as you. Yeah, new owner, that's great. I would kill for that with my football team.
Yeah.
New head coach, that's much better. That's all great. Jaden Daniels changed this team. So I don't care about what the other rookie quarterbacks did in their conference championship games.
Mm-hmm.
Jaden Daniels is different. Jaden Daniels got this team here. And on the flip side, I don't know if Jalen Hurts is healthy. The Eagles weren't all that impressive offensively in their win over the Packers. I'm talking about the pass offense. Obviously, Saquon is a superhuman.
Yeah.
Same thing last week. And if not for the snow, I'm not so sure the Eagles would have beaten the Rams.
I agree with you.
So I have to take the Commanders here. Again, you'd feel more confident if it's over a touchdown. But I'm riding the wave of this magical season, this quarterback, and then banging on the fact that I still don't think the Eagles quarterback is 100%. If they can somehow slow down Saquon in any way and not let him rush for over like 140, 150 yards,
yeah,
the Commanders are going to be live. And what we've seen from this team this year, if they've got a shot late in the game,
yep,
then their quarterback knows how to make the play. So I'm going to ride with our guy, Jaden Daniels.
Look, the Eagles are about Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
We all know that, and we know that Washington's run defense has been poor.
Yes.
All signs point to them continuing. It's not even the number that Fleece was talking about. Even, look, if Barkley gets 140, that's bad, obviously. However, it's how he gets it. If he rips off 2 runs that gives you 14 points and you contain him the rest of the game,
yeah,
you might have a chance. If he consistently is getting 7, 8, 9 yards a pop and they stay on the field, you're never going to be able to take out the Eagles. So it's how it works out, and that may even be to your benefit because Barkley's more of the home run. You just got to stop the – he's only getting 3, 4, 5. The 2 home runs, and now he's at 220 because
right,
he's run the ball 30 times. So
right,
it's how he winds up getting the ball and how he gets his yards.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the matchup for Washington in that regard. I don't. The idea that Jalen Hurts is a little banged up and beat up, that's helpful for Washington.
Yeah.
Love what they did offensively. We also know that it's a little bit askew. Detroit's defense was in shambles. That thing got away from them in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So let's not make this Washington offense world beaters. They're good. They're good. Jaden Daniels is tremendous. I'm taking nothing away. They're not a 45-point juggernaut that they put up against Detroit. That's a little bit askew.
Yeah.
All my knowledge, all my football watching makes me say the Eagles win this game pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
However, Hate is a strong presence. Strong.
So many twists and turns in this thing.
The hatred comes out, and I want to be able to root in this game.
Yeah.
So on pure hate, give me Washington plus the 6.5. On pure hate.
On pure hate. All right, well, now I feel like I'm going to disappoint Fleelman because I feel like he thinks I'm riding with him, and unfortunately I'm not. I agree with everything you said about the quarterback position and how he's different than he's made the difference in the team, and he's different than every other rookie quarterback in those games. And you said it almost exactly. Like, those teams, some of those quarterbacks were along for the ride. He is the team. I don't like the rest of the team. And I think Philadelphia is the far better team. And I think they know each other. And as you said, they are not the offensive juggernaut they were. They are a team that knows how to win tight games. But Philadelphia, for me, is the second half team of this like season. They pound you with the run. Those big runs you're talking about from Saquon, they come in the second half after just the offensive line pounding you. And this Commanders team, has shown the inability to stop the run. Barkley has had big games against them. They know each other well. I think they're going to scheme it up enough to make life uncomfortable for Jaden Daniels. And as great as he is, it is tough to go on the road on back-to-back weeks. And now he's got to play a far superior team with a defense that's much healthier and the best in the NFL this year, a team that knows him well, a team that's played against him already. And I just think this is a tough spot for a rookie quarterback to go into that building. I think this game is relatively close at the half, and I think the Eagles pull away in the second half. Give me the Eagles minus 6.5. And it's kind of an emotional hedge because you know how I feel. I do not want to see Jaden Daniels go into this building and win this game. I don't want to see it.
You're going to be sitting there during the game every time he makes a play, even if the Eagles win and cover.
Right.
You're gonna be like, I knew it. I knew it all season long.
I knew it.
All right, so we're moving on to the
Bills Chiefs.
Listen,
in Kansas City, a 1.5-point favorite.
It's funny. To a line Marco said earlier, like everything about my football knowledge and what I've learned from football watching.
Yeah.
With what we've seen from these teams historically and in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It's hard to make a case for the Bills, and not even all of it's anti-Bills. Like, yes, they were helped out by the Ravens, but I think the Chiefs are better. They're at home. They've won in these spots. The Bills are more banked up of the two teams. As good as Josh Allen is, he's not Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs always find a way to win these games. I've just had this feeling since early in the season that this is Josh Allen's year. And even though he wasn't asked to put on the Superman cape and carry the Bills on Sunday, it's not that he couldn't. It's that they didn't need him to. If Sean McDermott and Joe Brady don't get too conservative and let Josh Allen be Josh Allen in this game, I think Josh Allen can have his moment. The moment that he's waiting for, the moment that all Bills fans are waiting for. I'm going to take the Bills. It's almost insane to be betting against the Chiefs at home as a small favorite. We joke they can't cover the big numbers. They did last week, and 1.5 is not a big number, but I don't know. There's just something that tells me when last year was supposed to be the year, they had him at home.
Right.
They didn't get it done.
Yep.
This year, the chips are stacked against them. I feel like I'm going with a gut feel and not my head, but I'm riding with the Bills.
You know, all year I've said this Chiefs team is not as good as that the record shows. And it's not like I'm the only one. We've all said it. We've all watched the games and, they're getting lucky here. They're doing this there. They're talent-wise, they're just not as good as they've been. This is not the team from a couple of years ago when you're like, man, that Eagle team's good, but this Chiefs team, oof, this is going to be hard to be.
Right.
They're not the same. They're not exactly the same team. And you're right. The Bills have kind of had that Cinderella slipper all year long. And this line and everybody and the thought, everybody's on the same thing, and I'm usually big on that. Well, it's the magic carpet. It's what it is, and you know this team that you're getting them at the right time. No. I'm sorry. It's the Chiefs by 1.5 at home. They're better than the Bills, and I got to bet on Sean McDermott late coming up with the non-boneheaded play, and he's going to actually outsmart Andy Reid because you know this game's going to be close. There's no way either team is just going to roll. It's going to be 42-10. This game's going to be down to the wire. It's going to be tight. It's going to be on whether it's a turnover or whatever the hell it is. In that fourth quarter, this is going to be a game. I don't trust Sean McDermott to outsmart Andy Reid. I just don't. And it's not just, well, the Chiefs have had the Bills' number. Sean McDermott's made a ton of mistakes. he almost feels like he's holding them back a little bit. Does a great job of getting them prepared. He holds them back in the fourth quarter in some of these big games.
Yeah.
And another one that they almost choked away last week that they should have handed to the Ravens. I don't like those odds. I don't like this number. It screams, take the Chiefs. I don't care. I'll fall into it. Give me the Chiefs laying the 1.5.
I think it's impossible to take the Bills. I hear you. I understand. This, I mean, I don't know how you go against Kansas City in this game. And maybe I'm being a little biased because I was on the Josh Allen train ride, too. They got outplayed last week in the second half, especially. They had an opportunity, and maybe I'm focusing too much on it. And Josh Allen specifically had an opportunity to seal the game and couldn't get it done. And then the defense allowed Lamar Jackson to go down the field and beat them or tie them, and they dropped the ball. Kansas City is not dropping the ball, not at home. That's not what they do. I don't think there is a single position or part of the game, maybe Cook in the run game, maybe. Kansas City Chiefs are better than them in almost every single area, including the one thing they do best, the quarterback position. So, like, it's very difficult for me to come up with a valid reason to tell you the Chiefs -1.5 at home, this season team, Andy Reid, you guys all just said it. And plus, I don't trust Buffalo after last week to go in there and make it happen. And the Chiefs won't make the mistake, man. They are too good. They don't beat themselves. It's -1.5. I told you the last 20 games in a row, at home, 40 degrees or under, the Chiefs are 20 games and 0. 20 straight wins, 40 games and 40 degrees and under at home. And this is going to be in the low 30s, high 20s. So this is where they live, and they'll continue to live. And I hate saying it because I'll be pulling for the Bills hard, because who the hell wants to see a three-peat in Kansas City? But unfortunately, I think that's what we're going to see. All right, so that's it for Championship Weekend. We got me. I'm the only man. I'm the lone wolf, as the NFL Network likes to say. I'm the lone wolf on the Eagles, and Fliegelman's the lone wolf on the Bills for Championship Weekend.